The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Hello and you're very welcome to the show. It's Ciara King here again until 4:30. We have lots of great guests coming up today, including Samantha Rawson, the dog expert. She's going to be joining us in studio after 4 to answer your canine questions. So if you've any worries about your dog's behaviours or habits, you can text us on 51551 or email ray at rte.ie for some free expert advice. It's always a popular one as well, so do get your questions in early. We're also going to be talking Comic Con later on. It's coming to Dublin this weekend. So if you're a comic book fan, let us know if you're heading over to the event, because it's turned into this big massive event for kids and big kids alike. So we'll be chatting about that later on in the show. Now, a few bits that we spotted that caught our eye today. Listen to this headline. Bride and groom get stuck on mountain with broken down gondola. So Canadian newlyweds Jacqueline and Brennan McConnell were taking their wedding photographs when a gondola failed and stranded them with hundreds of other visitors on Sulphur Mountain in Banff National Park. They were forced to stay on the mountain overnight, but they said the experience was not that bad as they were warm and safe and they had each other. That's a pretty hard start to their nuptials. But you know the saying, a couple that gets stranded up a mountain in a gondola and survives together stays together. So the best of luck to them. But tell me, did you ever get stuck somewhere? And I've been stuck in bathrooms. That seems to be my thing. And it's always at the most inopportune moments of my life. So were you ever on a cancelled flight that left you stranded somewhere? Did you end up stuck somewhere because of bad weather? What unexpected detour did you end up on? All your travel stories are welcome. And another travel related news, the queues have already started. And for what? Well, hotels in the Mediterranean are being forced to hire security guards to police queues for, and wait for it, sunbeds. Now, I've seen this happen. Fights have broken out between holidaymakers. I've never seen fights, in fairness, but the fights have begun for the sunbeds, and it does get tense enough, because I know that going on holiday now, you have to get up earlier and earlier to leave your towel on a particular sunbed so you get a nice place by the pool or the beach. So yeah, trying to get the right spot is causing fights to break out across resorts in the Mediterranean. And speaking of beds, this is a curious one, but Marion Keyes, she asked on Twitter, is it too early to go to bed? Now, she tweeted that it was 21 minutes past 7. And I have this conversation with my friends all the time, but my time is closer to 9 p.m. than 7, because I feel like 10 is kind of the acceptable time to get into bed. But I'm always around 9 o'clock. I'm like, oh, I'd love to get in. Isn't there something so nice about sneaking into bed early as well? But then there is the fear of waking up earlier and then you're staring at the ceiling for about 4 a.m. But that might just be me getting old. What time do you hit the hay? 51551 or ray at rte.ie. And finally, we want to mention this, a celebration of Sinéad O'Connor. Debarra's Folk Club in Clonakilty, they've put out a message and they say, join local musicians in the front bar of Debarra's to celebrate the musical legacy of our recently lost chieftain of song, Sinéad O'Connor. All welcome and no musical skills are necessary. And this is a collective roar to honour her spirit. So it's not a concert. And that is on this evening from 5:30. And it's a really lovely idea. Good luck with that. OK, in a few minutes, I'll tell you all about today's quiz. A great chance for you to win a weekend away. But now it's time for a tune. This is Annie Lennox with Little Bird. Annie Lennox there with a Little Bird. Loads of texts coming in for Samantha, the dog expert, which we'll get to later in the show. And I just want to say a very quick hi to Mark, who says, and now Ciara, if you go to bed at 9, you lose the best part of 3 extra hours in the day. If you're in a 9-to-5 job that gives you 4 hours per evening to yourself, most of which is for making dinner and gearing up for the next day, around 11 or 12 is the magic number. 9 o'clock, I never heard the likes. Well, I apologise to you, Mark, for my sleeping habits. And in fairness, I say 9, half 9, but I'm usually still awake at around 11, 12, heading into 1. Anyway, now it's time to tell you about the quiz. This is our, here it is, our brand newish quiz. So we've called it the Whodunit quiz. So two people, that is two of you, will answer 3 whodunit questions each on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film and comedians. And like all whodunits, there will be clues. And if you answer without a clue, you get 2. And that is 2 points if you opt for the more difficult option and don't take a clue. However, if you opt for a clue, it's easier, so you get 1 point. And we have a prize. The Heritage in County Leash is part of FBD Hotels and Resorts, and it's giving one lucky listener and a guest a 2-night stay with breakfast both mornings and dinner on one evening at Blake's Restaurant. So the Heritage was recently awarded TripAdvisor Traveller's Choice Award for 2023. This is the ultimate spa getaway for you and your plus one to sit back and relax in their award-winning spa and take advantage of their brand new Moroccan bath treatments, including the Hammam or the Ras El Mud. The Heritage is a beautiful resort. It's set in the heart of the countryside in the pretty village of Killinard in County Leash. That's less than 20 minutes from Kildare Village. So, to view all the amazing packages on offer at The Heritage, you visit www.theheritage.com. Now, to enter, you have to answer this question. The people of Listowel celebrated a Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people dressed as Dolly Parton or Polly Pocket. I'll give you that question again. The people of Listowel celebrated a Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people dressed as Dolly Parton or Polly Pocket. Call us now, 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925, and we'll be back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, she is quickly becoming known as the Green Witch, but don't be scared because she's a nice one. The amazing Phoebe Foran joins us in studio now with her ultimate guide to foraging this August. And if you're wondering what exactly foraging is, then today we're going to start with the basics, aren't we?
I'm going to teach you everything you need to know.
Brilliant.
To get started.
Brilliant. Now, last time Ray spoke to you, you were at Bloom and I believe you were calling from a bush.
Oh my gosh, it was the funniest thing. I was just off stage and people were coming up to me going, oh, you were lovely, you were great. And I was like, I need to hide somewhere. So I climbed into a bush at Bloom to do the call.
No better place, in fairness. Like, there's going to be a lot of bushes at Bloom, isn't there? So the right place. And you were talking about your allotment the last time. Do you still have your allotment?
Oh, of course, of course. I don't think I'll ever not have an allotment. Mm. Even if I have my own land, I think I'll keep my little allotment. Do you know, I'm up in Bournebreen allotments and the community that we have there is just so special. And I think, especially during COVID, that's when I really started up there, we formed this gorgeous bond. And it's now my place that I go where I chill out, I quieten my mind, my heart rate slows down, I listen to the birds and I just get lost in muck.
In muck.
Digging holes in muck.
Fabulous. And you know, I know that the allotment, as you say, gave you a lot of solace during a tough time in your life. And you're just saying there, it provides the same amount of peace.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone who gardens will say the same thing, that once you get out into your garden or into nature, you kind of focus just on the job at hand and what exactly you're doing, and all of the clutter and the noise of all of the other bits that are happening in your life just kind of fade away. And I think nature is one of the most healing things that we can actually do for ourselves.
But it's one of these things, it's said time and time again, you know, to rest your mind, get out into nature. And
100%.
Sometimes it's hard for people that are living in the cities as well, but like, you're talking parks, find a field, just somewhere we can connect with nature.
Well, like, I bring people on urban foraging walks through Dublin, and I love the concept of urban foraging because, well, one, there's so much growing. Dublin is brilliant. We have so much green space and there's so much growing all at our doorsteps, whether you're in an apartment or whether you're in a house estate, no matter where you are, there's always a park nearby that you can kind of just puddle into, take a look, see what's there. And if you want to, start introducing nature into your life by foraging.
Mm-hmm. I grew up obviously surrounded by mountains and seas and woodlands and whatnot. And it wasn't until I moved out of the city during the pandemic that I became a plant mother.
Oh.
And I know, like, I always, obviously, I grew up, my dad had a garden and my uncle had a garden and growing fresh vegetables. And I was always surrounded by that growing up. But for me, becoming a plant mother, I was getting up in the morning and I was chatting away to them and I was watering them and I was, you know, planting basil and parsley and coriander and you name it, and corn. Like, it really becomes a part of you, doesn't it?
And it's so gratifying when you can actually plant something from a seed and watch it grow. Like, I always say that when you feel like your world is upside down and everything else is stopped or twirling in the air, you can actually just take solace in the fact that if you put seeds into the ground, they'll grow.
So I was at a friend's wedding. It was the last wedding I was at, obviously before the pandemic. And her little favours were little cornflower seeds.
Aww.
And I had them. I took them obviously with me and I kept them. And I was like, do you know what? I'm actually going to plant them. So I spent the couple of months watching them grow. I was taking photos and I was sending them to her. But there's something really gratifying, isn't there?
It's so special. Like, that's it. Seeing something grow from the ground up. And you do have that sense of accomplishment. Oh, look what I did. I made that. I brought life into the world.
Yeah. And I suppose you're still in awe, like, that this is now your job. You know what I mean?
I'm very lucky. I kind of feel like, when am I going to get caught out here, that I've been able to turn this nature into my career. I always say Mother Nature is my boss.
Yeah.
I have a skincare brand. I make everything from wild plants that I forage. I bring people on foraging tours. So literally every day of my life is spent in nature. And it's like, I just feel like the luckiest girl in the world.
Yeah, and I feel like foraging, it's been a buzzword that's kind of become popular over the last 10 years. But really, if we go back in time, that is how we existed, you know, as human beings. So let's say, okay, so we're going to talk about foraging 101 today. So if you want to get back into foraging, what is your advice for someone who is looking to get started in it?
Yeah, because there's a lot of people who are just, they don't know where to start. And I suppose gardening and the likes can be quite elitist, where you feel like I need to know everything before I do anything. You don't.
Okay.
Get just tiny little steps. So I would say bring along a few little things with you if you're going to go out and do a bit of foraging. You bring along the likes of your scissors. You don't need to go buy the best snips in the world. Bring along your little scissors, a little muslin bag or a little cloth bag that you can collect your little plants in. And what I would say to do is start very, very simply. Pick three plants that you want to go and find. Mm. And even if you don't pick them, go find them and identify them. And if you want to take little bits of them, only take what you need for what you're going to use.
Okay.
So because we're not the only ones who use the plants, and wildlife doesn't have the opportunity to go to the supermarket. Mm-hmm. So leave us there for them.
I remember my mum's friend bought me a little book on wildflowers when I was a little girl, and I actually went looking for it again during that time when I was at home, just to be able to walk through and be able to identify what I was actually looking at and whatnot.
It's really special to be able to do that. I highly recommend, there's a book called The Wildflowers of Ireland by Zoe Devlin, and I use that book like every day. And like a lot of people now with technology, you can definitely download apps that will help you. You can take a snap and it'll help you to identify.
I would
recommend that one. The only thing is, like with all tech, it's not always going to be 100% accurate, but it'll lead you into the right direction. So if you take a picture of a plant and it says this is what this is, I would then later on in the evening go back to my Zoe Devlin book and go, okay, it's not exactly that one, but it's his friend or it's his family member. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that means that you can identify correctly.
Yeah. Because I think as well, there's a lot of time I'm like, oh my, that's a beautiful flower. And then it's actually a weed. I do that a lot, you know.
Well, to be honest, the plants that I work with the most are the weeds. They are the ones that, to me, are most full of medicine. And they're so rich with folkloric tales. Like our heritage, the Irish heritage, is so steeped with wild plants and dandelions and nettles. And that's what I love to actually teach people about, is the different elements. So because it really makes you connect with the plants so much more. And the wild stuff is really what we need to be helping to cultivate now.
So speaking of nettles, obviously, you know, when I was younger, running through the fields, I'd be absolutely full of nettle stings and I'd be picking up dock leaves and rubbing them on my legs and stuff like that. So what are the powerful kind of benefits of nettles?
So nettle is super, super powerful, particularly for anybody who suffers with hay fever or any kind of allergies. I feel that Ireland is a country of snots. We are all snotting and sneezing all the time. And I kind of feel like if you are to be looking for something to really help you, nettle is where you want to go, particularly nettles that grow in your local area. Much the way they say use your local honey, I would say use your local nettles. And by literally drinking a cup of nettle tea every day, you will really help to balance your histamine levels, and you're using the same pollen that's in the area that you're breathing. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really powerful. So just a few leaves into some hot water.
And I'd imagine wearing gloves, obviously, before you go picking any nettles.
Unless you're a witch, you can pick them.
Oh, really? Is that the secret?
There's tricks. There are tricks to be able to do it. But if you do get stung, when you use dock, I can remember as a child, like that, putting the dock on my skin and going, it's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. If you scrunch up the leaves or you squeeze the juice out of the stem, that's the part that's going to help you and that's the bit that most people forget, and they just go, oh, it's not doing anything.
You see, this is it. We were just told,
put the dock on you,
and that's what we did. Yeah. We didn't question it. We were like, oh, a nettle sting, oh, we need a dock leaf, you know. So that's what you're saying, just squeeze the juice.
The juice from the stem, or you crunch up the leaf it's releasing the juices out of it. That's the bit that's going to really, really help you.
Now when you say it, I wish I knew that about 20 years ago.
We all did.
And obviously there is things that you need to be wary of when you're foraging as well.
Yes. There's a few little tips and tricks. Like, one, don't go into people's private property. I have been known to be crawling around in my neighbour's garden picking their daisies. But if you make sure you're not on someone's private property, also be aware of where you're picking from. Are you picking plants that are along a busy road where there might be traffic throwing up dirt or pollution or fumes onto it? So I'd always say kind of stick 50 metres or even better 100 metres off kind of the main road. Also, animals pee. Mm-hmm. Not only animals pee in bushes. So to be aware of where
you're... Oh God, I never thought of that.
Especially if where you're foraging is on kind of, it's close to a pub. Yourself.
Yes.
So stick above hip height where possible when you're foraging, or like that again, stick a bit further off the beaten track than along a stretch that's quite busy or, you know, high traffic use. And also only take what you need. As I said, like animals will use the plants for food, berries, the birds will use them. So only take what you need.
So think about the animals and the birds before you
100%,
okay, do your foraging.
100%.
All right. And that's very interesting about the public spaces as well. Again, it's not something that have kind of entered my mind, but now it will forevermore.
Yeah.
So thank you. Also, there is dirty plants, as you said, we were kind of chatting about them. We're kind of, you know.
Yeah, like whenever I forage anything, I would give it a wash anyway.
Yeah.
You don't need to be getting the fairy liquid out onto it, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But that'll all come down to where you pick from. So
gotcha.
I will always tend to try and find somewhere that's a little bit untouched, that it's not a main thoroughfare where there might be litter or rubbish or traffic passing. So just to be very aware. And then also just give it a little wash as well.
And also, I'd imagine, be very careful what you actually pick and make sure you double check what it is before you do anything with it.
Unless you are 100% certain of what you are picking, just mm-hmm. don't. I say give it a photo forage, take a picture of it, and then you keep it in your, even if you want to keep, if you want to collect plants in your phone, you know what I mean, you collect your little pictures. Not all plants are created equal. Some can really, really burn you or are poisonous. They're not all meant for human consumption. Some are there just for our pollinators or for birds and stuff like that. They're not all for us.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you know what you are foraging, just give it a nod. Say hello. It's not for you.
What are the most popular plants to forage then? So now we've chatted about nettles.
Yeah, I would always like dandelion is a fantastic one to forage. Dandelion, as a herbalist, we consider dandelion to be the perfect plant. Every part of the dandelion has a use and they're really, really potent for the likes of your liver, your pancreas and your kidneys. Also for your bile production. Like, in fact, if you were to eat one single dandelion leaf before your meal, about 30 minutes before your main meal, it will help your body to produce the perfect amount of bile that you need to process your meal. And you can also use the lovely little yellow flowers on your salad. They're fully edible and it makes it a bit Instagrammable.
I've heard of, obviously, dandelion tea as well.
Yeah. Our dandelion coffee, it was actually used during the emergency years in Irish history. They would have ground up the root, the roasted root of the dandelion root, and use that as a coffee substitute. And it's I tend to bring it for my people on my tours, and it's really, really surprisingly flavourful and dark.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a different way of doing it,
and
you know.
Chatting earlier about sneaking into your next door neighbour's garden and picking daisies.
Yes.
Like, I've just made daisy chains.
Yes.
Tell me, what can you do? What are the power of daisies?
Listen, daisies are one of the most underrated plants that we have in Ireland, and they have so many uses. Daisies are known as the poor man's arnica. So they're actually got the same healing powers in terms of they will take care of bites, bruises, hematoma, anywhere there's blood raised to the skin, scarring, acne scarring, stings, bites and stings, sunburn, the whole lot. Like, you would not really realise how powerful daisies are, and people run over them with a lawnmower and break my heart.
Okay.
But they have so many uses, and it's as simple as mashing them up in a pestle and mortar, adding some aloe vera gel into it, and then you can apply it to your skin. You can also put them into a tea. They taste kind of lemony, so I'd put them into make a tea, basically 6 or 7 of the heads with some lemon slices, a bit of honey into it, into some hot water, and that's fantastic for female hormones, helping to balance female hormones, particularly period pains and the likes.
Yeah.
So there's just they have so many healing properties, so not just for daisy chains.
So when you do gather all your plants and all your weeds and whatnot, how can we store them correctly? Because I imagine bringing them inside and then they just kind of dry up and they die, and you know.
So like the thing is, like, only pick what you're going to use. And this is, it's one of those things when you start foraging, you get very enthusiastic when you see something like, ooh, look at that, I'm going to take loads of that. And then you get home and you're like, I really don't know what I'm going to do with it. So pick what you need for what you're going to use. I would advise if you want, like, daisies obviously aren't available in December.
Mm-hmm.
So I would preserve them in the likes of honey. And so the honey, it'll infuse into the honey, and then you have this delicious honey that is infused with the flavour and the medicinal goodness of the honey, of the daisies.
Yeah.
You can also make what we call tinctures, and tinctures are preserving and pulling out the medicine of a plant through high alcohol liquid. So the likes of very high alcohol vodka or apple cider vinegar. And you basically store them in the apple cider vinegar or the vodka.
Like in little jars
Yeah, absolutely. And you can leave it for about 6 or 7 weeks before you strain the flowers out of it. And what will happen is the liquid will be completely infused with all, it'll pull out all the medicine of it. And then as you need it, then you get to take a spoonful as you want.
As you go along.
Or if you're making like a salad dressing, you can add your apple cider, a spoon of it, of your apple cider vinegar into your olive oil, you know, to make your salad dressing. So you're getting this extra little hit of medicinal goodness from the plants into it.
It just all sounds so simple.
And so simple.
It's right there on our doorstep, you know, in a lot of regards. But now, is August the right time for foraging? Or when is the best month to?
Well, listen, this month is a very harvesty month. You'll see the farmers doing the same thing. So there's lots of beautiful flowers at the moment. So like at the moment, I'm foraging the likes of meadowsweet and mullein flowers, different things that are growing at the moment. And we're starting to see the likes of the berries starting to come into play as well. So it is a lovely season, a lovely month to...
Blackberries, isn't
blackberries,
it? August
yeah.
is always the best time. August
yeah.
and September,
you'll
isn't
see
it,
them
to
all
pick blackberries.
Starting, yeah. starting to come out. I'm already seeing the likes of the elderberries starting to make an appearance already. Now is a lovely time. We've had a big bash of rain over the past couple of weeks. Please tell me it's done. but so there's lots of plants are in bloom. So it's a really, really nice time to forage right now.
Okay. Now, you have forager groups, don't you?
Yeah, I bring people on foraging tours and they're all along the Dodder. If you're interested, you can find on forager.ie. That's my website and
that
on Instagram.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. That is Phoebe Foran. Thank you for giving me the lowdown on foraging. I'm now going to look at daisies and dandelions and everything else differently. We're going to be back after this.
Thank you so much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 if you'd like to get in touch with the show today. Now, I am very excited to speak to my next guest. I've just finished her debut novel, The List, which British Vogue are calling the book of the summer, and I can see why. It's already a Sunday Times bestseller, and the talented creator behind it, author, columnist and journalist Yami Adeoke. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, when you hear Sunday Times bestseller, how does that feel? And I know you said that you were nervous, you know, with this book. It must be a huge relief to hear such positive feedback.
Oh my God, the biggest relief ever. I was terrified that after all the kind of hype and writing around it and articles and interviews I'd been doing, that then it would, for lack of a better phrase, be a flop. And I was like, oh no, that's going to be really embarrassing if, you know, I've got all this press and then it just turns out it doesn't live up to expectations. But when I got that, you know, email confirming that it made Sunday Times, I was so relieved and so thrilled, because we never made it with my co-author with our other books. We never managed to make Sunday Times, so it was just so lovely to be able to do so this time.
It's a huge big deal, and also when you write a book and you put it out there into the world, you're effectively asking people to, like, you know, like me, love me, love what I've done. You know, it's a difficult position to be in, a wonderful one to be in, but a difficult one all the same.
It's like being on Tinder, but like it's your book and it's the whole world.
Exactly.
It's the whole country.
Exactly.
It's very difficult.
Speaking about your book, firstly, let's tell, you know, the listeners what your book is about.
So it's essentially a book about the internet, first and foremostly. It follows a Instagram famous couple, Ola and Michael, who are due to get married in a big sort of Instagrammable wedding in a month's time. And a month before the wedding, an anonymous list goes up on social media accusing 70 different men of abuse. And of course, Michael's name is on it. So Ola, the bride, has, you know, a month to decide whether she stands by her man and whether she believes him, or whether she decides to sort of, you know, believe the list and they go their separate ways. She's also a feminist journalist, which complicates things even more, because feminism and, you know, writings around Me Too and stuff are essentially how she made her name in her career. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what it's about.
Okay, we'll get to that. But you first had the idea back in 2017. So why wait until now? Because as you said there in the description, it's a very controversial topic. Were you cautious going into it?
You know what? So I had the idea, as you said, in 2017, but I actually wanted to write it as a nonfiction book. I'm a journalist by trade. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much, you know, the only job I've ever had in adult life. So I kind of felt like that was the, you know, medium I wanted to tell it in, as nonfiction, as a long form investigative piece. But, you know, it did feel like it was potentially a bit too fraught to do so in 2017. It was still something that we were all grappling with. It was unfolding in real time, those kind of lists that, you know, the book focuses on. So I then shelved it for a bit, came back to it a few years later as a play, because I realized then I wanted to fictionalize it, but thought, you know, maybe a play. I guess this was me just trying to put off writing a novel, essentially. was like, well, I could do it as a play. You know, obviously that didn't work out. The less said about it, the better. And then it was lockdown and I had lots of free time. So, yeah, essentially, you know, everyone else was baking. I can't cook. And I kind of was like, yeah, this could be something. I've got very little to lose and I've got all the time in the world. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, it works very well as a book. I can tell you that. And I also, because I can see how it could work as a play as well. But as I said, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, someone else will write that.
Not you. Okay, you're too busy probably right now. You originally got into writing by chance, I believe.
Yes, very much by chance. So I was always good at writing at school, but was, you know, my real passion was art. That's actually what I spent the rest of lockdown doing, lots of paintings and stuff. But yeah, I studied law at university. I started a blog just as a complete hobby, you know, on a whim. And someone who's actually in the acknowledgements, a guy from my university had just said, you know, you should take this blog seriously. You know, you could be a journalist. You could write about pop culture, which is what I wrote about on the blog, but you could make a living out of it. And it was the first time I think someone had actually told me that I could, you know, monetize and make a career out of what I enjoyed doing. Because mm-hmm. the reason I didn't take art as a, you know, as seriously as a job is primarily because of the financial sort of limitations that often are placed on creative industries. Yeah. So, yeah.
And how did you find then when you started writing fiction?
Oh my goodness, it was horrible, which I know you're not supposed to say, but it was horrible. It was so hard to start with. I, you know, cut my teeth writing journalistic pieces and nonfiction, and I didn't want to take it for granted that just because I write in one way, I can write in another way. Mm-hmm. So I really, you know, had to start from scratch. But I keep saying to people, I hadn't done anything that I was bad at since school. I left that all behind, the maths, the science, the things that I'm not good at. Once I got to A-level and GCSE, you know, yeah, A-level really, I kind of only did subjects I was good at. And fiction was something I hadn't done in several years. So coming to it as a novice was very hard. But once I started to have fun with it, it was, you know, mm-hmm. completely revolutionised.
And you say that first and foremost, your book, it is about the internet and cancel yes. culture and trial by Twitter. And it really is something that we need to look into more, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah, I think that, you know, I've used the phrase multiple times that we are sleepwalking into a crisis at the mm-hmm. moment. I think we talk a lot about, you know, Instagram's effects on self-esteem, so for instance, and you know, teenagers. And we talk a lot about, you know, other sort of issues with the internet. The fake news crisis being one, but in terms of the ways that anonymity can be weaponized and the way that, you know, causes that are for good and you know, hashtags that have been used to empower people, such as Me Too, can be weaponized by people with nefarious purpose, nefarious, you know,
reasons.
Hopes yeah. or reasons, mm-hmm. exactly. That's not something that we really discuss so much. And I think I wanted to kind of bring that conversation to the fore with the book.
And you really did, because as a reader, like, honestly, you're in this moral dilemma, because I didn't know whose side to be on. There was this push and pull in my brain of who to believe, what was wrong and what was right. But you yourself, you had the dilemma of being both a feminist and a journalist as well. But I thought you dealt with that so well in the book.
Oh, thank you. That's really kind.
Yeah, you
it was
really
very
did.
Hard. Mm-hmm. Real tightrope.
But there really is this grey area when it comes to allegations, isn't there? And this is something that really needs to be tackled. And like, obviously, I'm not asking you for the answer to the problems of the internet, because I know that's a huge question. But how did you feel that you dealt with that in the book yourself?
I think one thing that really was useful was realising that we are talking about the internet and we're not necessarily talking about allegations more generally.
Yeah.
So when we look at, you know, the very, very tiny number of false allegations that are made in cases like the ones that, you know, the one that is outlined in the book, we're talking about people going into a police station. We're talking about people engaging with, you know, public institutions mm-hmm. that then often, far more often than not, let them down. Whereas the internet, there is no law. It is lawless. It is the Wild West. And I think once you kind of look at the fact that we're looking at something that has no kind of like infrastructure and is incredibly unregulated, then you realize how easy it is to be taken advantage of. And I think that made me sort of feel more comfortable having the conversation, because it's not a conversation about, you know, how often people make false allegations, which is very, very rare. It's more mm-hmm. about, you know, have you watched the show Catfish, in which anyone on the internet can pretend to be someone they're not. And we see how regularly that happens, and just more than anything, how easy it is. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think if we don't have that conversation as progressive people, I always say it's a conversation that will be commandeered by people who have nefarious reasons. Thank you for giving me that word earlier.
Your character, Michael in the book, I was quite taken with the character of Michael and his journey. and his very specific right. journey. And obviously, I don't want to give too much away because I want everyone to read this book and be as surprised by each page as I was. And it was just, you dealt with that male mentality so well of Michael, who appears on this list. He's about to lose everything that's important to him in his life, but he's created this online world with Ala, who is his fiance. But also, when he does eventually end up on the list, there's a reflection there on Michael's behalf of, oh, wait a second, maybe I didn't treat girls so well in school. Maybe I didn't treat girls so well in college. And then also this whole, he had no help. Let's say the allegations were true or untrue. Again, I don't want to give anything away. But he tried to go down different avenues of help and there was nothing really there for him.
And I think that is the reality for multiple people. Firstly, in terms of the conversations in, 2017 and onwards as part of the Me Too movement really made a lot of men in particular look back on their past behaviours and really, re-examine who they had been and who they are and, what wrongs they might have done that could potentially lead to them being rightly, in many cases, or potentially in some instances, wrongly put on a list such as this. And I think it's something that whether you were accused or not, we all kind of have had to contend with, but also just the lack of help there is regarding anything that happens online. I'm talking not just if you find yourself accused of something anonymously. I'm talking about even somebody, saying malicious, horrible things, threats. It's really difficult to have any recourse at all, regardless of what's happening to you online, because Twitter doesn't have a number, or not Twitter now, X or Instagram don't have phone numbers that you can just call up and say, hey, this is what's happening. It's very difficult to navigate. Again, something I don't think we think about very much.
Obviously, for somebody in your type of career as well, and I know it a little bit myself, it's very hard to just ignore the internet and everything that comes with it. Like, I've kind of taken a massive step back. I wasn't one of those, I was never, putting my opinions out there. Genuinely, I was just kind of tweeting about Roger Federer, my favourite tennis player. And now I just talk about movies and books and I put up nice pictures on Instagram of where I'm from. What is your relationship now with the internet?
I'd say it's quite similar. I'd say in the past maybe 2 months, it's just been book promo. But before then, it was just outfits. I love clothes. I love fashion. I would just post, lots of pictures of me in nice dresses, lots of pictures of me on holiday or in fancy places. Because, I wanted to take that step back because I actually did sort of make my, name in the industry. I sort of, was someone who wrote lots of threads on Twitter/X. I was someone who wrote a blog and kind of made my name on the internet.
Yeah.
And that was for better or worse. It gave me lots of visibility, but it also, especially as a black woman online, it left me open to a lot of, unregulated abuse and opinions and, and just cruelty. So I've definitely changed over the years the way I use it.
Yeah. And finishing your book, again, I don't want to give anything away, but what a twist at the end. Anyway, we'll say no more. But I had so many questions more so than answers, because, as I said, you dealt with this, just a really nuanced topic from all different sides and all different levels. As I said to you, it left me going, wait a second, what are we going to do about this? Because this is like the Wild West. And are you hoping that this is going to open up more conversations about online regularity?
Oh, absolutely. I think I'm glad that, like myself, you sort of came away with it with no answers. I certainly had no answers whatsoever and absolutely never pretended to. And I kind of think I wanted to broach the question so that people that are smarter than me and, are kind of more across the conversation could provide answers. Because I think a lot of us do feel quite scared and quite confused by everything that's unfolding, but feel quite helpless. And I do think that the lack of conversation is probably one of the number one reasons we all feel so frightened, because we're just rolling with it. We're all in agreement. This is all insane. And that the internet is completely the Wild West and so much stuff's going on that doesn't sit well with us, but we don't know how to deal with it. But I feel we don't know how to deal with it because we don't speak about it. So hopefully this book fosters some form of conversation, meaning that others might be able to provide the answers that I certainly could not.
And have you seen your book out in the wild yet?
Oh my goodness, I was at the Standard the other day for an event in London, and I, whilst sort of like in the middle of the party, saw it poking out of someone's bag. And I ran over to her and I was like, that's me, as opposed to that's my book. I was like, that's me. Did a little signing in the club. It was fun.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was
that's
really
amazing.
Nice.
Because, not only is the book a success, but it's already been adapted for TV. And I'm not surprised because the dialogue is just so brilliant and it's so,
oh, thank you.
It's so Croydon. Sweden, if you don't mind me saying. Like, I'd imagine a lot of it was inspired.
That's truly a compliment.
And you have you. This ability. Like, I found myself in the middle of a Nigerian Ghanaian wedding reading your book. And yay. I was like, this is like incredible. Now, was this always in your mind that it was going to be a TV show or a movie? Or did it come as a surprise to you?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for the comments about the dialect and it feeling very Croydon. That was all incredibly intentional on my part. In terms of it being, you know, adapted for TV, I had hoped, as anyone does that writes a book, that it might be adapted. And I did think that, you know, given the subject matter and, you know, I guess when I first started writing it, it had a lot less twists because this is when I wasn't enjoying it and I wasn't having fun with it. Yeah. But as I started to write it and I started to grow in confidence, I thought, oh, this could, you know, humbly make quite a good TV show. But, you know, that there are loads of books that can make great TV shows and don't get made. So I, you know, kind of had the fleeting idea. So when I got the confirmation it was happening and with A24, BBC and HBO Max, no less, I don't think it will ever sink in. I think I'm going to have to like watch it on TV to realise this actually happened.
I know. I say it's just so mad. And you gave a nod to Normal People and our very own Paul Mescal when you mentioned how you'd maybe like to approach it as adaptation.
Absolutely. I think what was done in terms of Paul Mescal and Daisy Edgar Jones really being like, us being introduced to them via Normal People and, you know, them, it was just incredible. I think we all feel so part of that journey. I don't know Paul Mescal, I don't know Daisy Edgar Jones, but I see their trajectory and I feel weirdly proud of them because I feel like the first thing, you know, I watched them from Normal People to like bloody like Oscar noms and all that
kind of stuff.
It's just amazing to see. So I really want to do the same thing. I think that sometimes using a really big Hollywood star can detract at times from a plot because you're so focused on, you're watching it for that person sometimes. But I really want to do what was done with Normal People, where it's like you break incredible actors and make them stars and then everyone feels part of that journey. Mm-hmm. So well, crossing my fingers we can do that.
We can give a big shout out now to Paul Mescal if he happens to be listening to the radio. We'll get him in contact with your people and we'll see what can happen. You never know.
Exactly. Love your work.
So what does the rest of the year hold for you? I'd imagine you're going to be very busy with this book tour. I'm sure you're, as I said to you at the start, you're probably in the midst of this. The second book, is that on the way? Do you want to talk about it?
Yes, the second book is on the way. Goodness. it will be there eventually. I think, my head is so kind of bogged down with stuff to do with the list at the moment. And I've got to go to the US in a few months in October to, you know, sort of launch it there. So I think until pretty much the end of the year, I'm going to be like very much in the list headspace. But I have started the second book.
Yay.
It is equally controversial, if not more. I honestly think, I'm always saying if I don't get cancelled for the list, it might be for the second book. We'll see how it goes. But I'm really excited about it. It's very, very different. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's great.
It's been a fun journey. I really look forward to that. And I wish you the best of luck with the list. And as I said, I'll be introducing your book to my book club.
Thank you.
And so I can't wait for the discussions that surround it, because this really is a book where you'll walk away and you'll want to talk to somebody else about it. You'll want to go, oh my God, what did you think about that and the ending and everything. So best of luck with it. Yami.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Pleasure.
The List by Yami Adeoke is available on all platforms right now. Go out and get it. You won't regret it. 51551 if you'd like to get in touch with the show today. We'll be back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, just to get to a couple of text messages. Somebody says, hi, Kira, I just downloaded The List. I was looking for something to read next, so I'm really looking forward to starting this. Perfect timing. Thanks. That's from Maeve in Cork. And also on the topic of foraging, Kira, I can remember my mom telling me about making coffee from ground dandelion roots during World War II. We also picked the leaves to tie in bunches for the baby fluffy chicks in their run. Full of iron, I was told. And that is from Breed in Ferrybank and Leitrim. And also before that, can this information about foraging be put up somewhere? This is so interesting and informative. Helen in Limerick, you can listen back to the chat with Phoebe Foran, the forager, on rte.ie/Ray. And Adrian has texted in on 51551 to say, there's no such thing as a weed. It's just a flower in the wrong place. And we were obviously talking about bedtimes and times to go to bed earlier on as well. And somebody's texted in to say, as a night owl who retires at 4 a.m, going to bed at 9 p.m. is like sleeping in the middle of the day. As the saying goes, 6 hours for a man, 7 hours for a woman, and 8 hours for a fool. Is that a saying? Because I have never heard that saying before. 51551. Now, this weekend, if you're down near the Dublin Convention Centre, don't be surprised to run into The Mandalorian or Spider-Man or any amount of sci-fi and fantasy characters, as it is Dublin Comic Con. So thousands of enthusiasts guests are going to be descending on the tube in the cube to see some of their favourite actors, comic illustrators and cosplay artists. So Carl Walsh is co-founder of Dublin Comic Con and he's busy packing amazing things in the centre and he joins me on the line now. Hello, Carl.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
How are you? So for those who are not familiar with a Comic Con, how do you describe them and what are they all about?
Oh, that's a tough one there. They're all encompassing. So if you're a fan of comics, movies, games, sci-fi, fantasy and everything in between, it's kind of the event for you. Like we've had people come to the show who are comic artists and they've left with jobs from networking at the show right through to people who's coming with their family in costume to have a bit of fun, right through to people who want to meet the stars that they've grown up watching and idolize, and everything in between.
And like we've seen an explosion, right, of Marvel movies over the last 10 years, but obviously Comic-Con has existed long before that. How long has Dublin Comic-Con been running?
Since 2013, so we're still relatively new by comparison.
Okay, but you've had about 15 or
16 shows since 2013.
That's a lot. So how many people are we talking?
This weekend, about 20,000.
20,000 people over the course of the weekend.
And we wish we could have more. Unfortunately, there's not enough space.
I know, there's not enough space. And you know what? Costumes probably take up an awful lot of more space as well. Now, as I said, you have two conventions each year, one in spring and one in the summer, which is this weekend. Now tell me, who are the big names for this weekend?
The biggest has to be Linda Hamilton.
Wow, from the Terminator movies.
It's her. Yeah, and it's her first show in Europe. And I think even in a good while, I think 12 years ago she was last in Europe signing and meeting fans, and it's been many years since she's done signings, so she's kind of the biggest name, and we're lucky to have joining her Michael Biehn and Robert Patrick. So you have Michael from Terminator 1 and Robert from Terminator 2.
Now I was
kind of that nice treat.
Yeah, no, I was a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, and I believe James Marsden, he's best known for playing Spike, he was the blonde vampire with the English accent. He's also going to be at the Comic Con this weekend.
He is indeed, and it's the second time here with us. He was back here in 2019, and he's an absolute gent. Like everyone who goes to meet him, no sooner is he left that people are asking, is he coming back?
Is he coming back? That's always a good sign.
Everyone loves Spike at the end of the day.
Well, they do actually, don't they? A lot of people were more Team Spike than Team Angel, really, by the end of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Also, just to quickly mention, Christina Chong from Star Trek, Steve Downes, who's the voice of Master Chief from the massive Halo game series, which is huge, are also going to be appearing, and Robert Patrick, who played Advanced Terminator in Terminator 2. So a lot of Terminator this weekend.
Oh, yes. And also, we have Jen Taylor. She's Cortana in Halo, but she's also Princess Peach Mario.
Which is pretty cool, which was a big movie earlier on, you know, this year as well. So you guys are obviously very active on social media, and you're able to tell people that your US-based actors will be able to attend and take part. Although there is the actor strike in America, isn't that the case? So the likes of Linda Hamilton and Michael Biehn, they can still attend as they're not promoting new productions. Is that the case?
Exactly. Now, we obviously have to, and we perform fans, we have to limit certain questions that have to be asked. They can't be promoting new or old movies, but they can still talk about themselves, talk about everything they've done. And it was a nice fine line that all events had to walk with actors, but everyone kind of came to an agreement and said, look, you're here promoting you, not just your characters, it's you. And it just allowed them not to let down the fans.
That's
the big thing, is letting the fans meet them.
And also Comic-Con is all about the costumes though, isn't it? Like there's been some amazing and impressive cosplay costumes that, you know, you've seen people wearing when they attend. What are the most amazing ones? What are the standout ones?
Oh, we had someone with dragon wings on the stage many years ago. It was very impressive. It was a fantastic one from a local crowd who called Team Emerald Cosplay, who made a fantastic armor from Doom, one of the games, and it was spectacular. And to be honest, there's so many costumes when I see coming in the door, you couldn't pick just one. Like even the judges on the costume contest, I can see them deliberating. They don't know who to pick because you have people who can sew anything from scratch, and people who can make a piece of foam look like metal. And you have kids who are only 10 doing the same.
Amazing.
And it's just, the scale is unreal.
And I'd imagine it's super competitive. And I love the fact that if you do have a cosplay costume, that you have a cosplay repair station at the Comic-Con as well. So if your costume gets a tear, you have people on hand to glue your horns back onto your head or fix your gory makeup or whatnot.
Exactly, because inevitably it will happen. No matter how good it is, you'll hit into something, but we'll be there to help pick up the pieces, literally.
Okay, so that is Comic-Con. It's on this weekend in the Convention Centre in Dublin. And go along and enjoy yourselves. Any surprises, Carl?
We have a nice few sets, and we might be able to bring Arnie without his skin in the T-800 form on display. So we're working on a few new sets for people.
Okay.
And if you're a fan of esports, we have our esports finals as well happening every evening.
Okay, brilliant. So check that out. You can check it out on dublincomiccon.com this weekend, the 12th to the 13th of August in the Convention Centre. Carl Walsh, co-founder of Dublin Comic Con, thank you so much for coming on.
And thanks for having me.
Now let's take a song, and we're going to take one from Guardians of the Galaxy. Here's Come and Get Your Love. Gurmeel Magad Mora. Now it is time for the Whodunit quiz. So we have two contestants on the line. They are waiting. This is the Whodunit quiz. So two people will answer three Whodunit questions each on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film, comedians, you name it. And like all Whodunits, there will be clues. And if you answer without a clue, you get two. That's 2 points. And if you opt for the more difficult option and don't take a clue. However, if you opt for a clue, it's easier, so you get 1 point. And we have a prize. The Heritage in County Leash, part of FBD Hotels and Resorts, is giving one lucky listener and a guest a two-night stay with breakfast, both mornings and dinner, on one evening at Blake's Restaurant. The Heritage was recently awarded TripAdvisor Traveller's Choice Award for 2023. And this is the ultimate spa getaway for you and your plus one to sit back and relax in their award-winning spa and take advantage of their brand new Moroccan bath treatments, including the Hammam or the Ras El Mud. So the Heritage, it's a beautiful resort. It's set in the heart of the countryside in the pretty village of Killinard in County Leash. That's less than 20 minutes from Kildare Village. So to view all the amazing packages on offer at the Heritage, you visit www.theheritage.com. Now we have two contestants on the line. I want to say hello to Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Ciara. Good afternoon.
How's it going? Where in the country are you today?
I'm in Mullingar.
And what are you up to in Mullingar?
Well, I'm off work today, so I've been doing a bit of work around the house and in the garden and going to the FLA later this evening.
Oh, you're going to the FLA. Are you playing at the FLA, or are you just going to...
No. I'll in for the sights and the sounds, and might have a pint with a few of the lads tonight.
Well, Martin Morrissey and Louise Duffy, they're down there for the week as well, I think, with RTÉ Radio 1. So you can tell them I said hello if you're chatting to them.
I will, of course.
So you're on a day off, so you're mowing the lawn. I don't know where you're listening to earlier on. We were talking about foraging and daisies. And how Dee Dee was afraid of daisies now been mowed over in a garden. I don't know. Do you feel that daisies should be used for different reasons, Paul?
Sure. If they help, if they can help us, you know, with medicines, absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, Paul, you stay there. I'm going to chat to Claire very quickly.
Hello, Ciara.
Hello. How are you, Claire?
I'm good.
And where are you in the country today?
I'm calling from Knocklyon in Dublin, but I'm originally from Longford.
I was saying that it wasn't a Dublin accent. I was thinking that in my head. All right. And what are you up to for the day?
Well, I'm here trying to get my little one asleep, and she's here looking at me wide-eyed. Hopefully she's quiet.
Is she of the age to help you with the quiz?
No, she's 7 months now, but she won't, I'm afraid, help me out. That's a pity.
Are you on maternity leave at the minute then? So
yeah, I'm on maternity leave for the foreseeable, yeah. So shout out to all the kids and teachers in Leixlip and Kildare.
Okay, is that where you work?
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay, so when are you back to work then? Not for a while, I'd imagine.
Not for a while. Well, hopefully, maybe till after Christmas.
Okay.
So take as long off with as little one as I can.
Okay, and what's the little one's name?
Sophie.
All right. Well, hello to Sophie. And I'm sorry that she can't help you out with the quiz. We were talking foraging there. Are you green? We were talking about foraging earlier on the show. Are you green-fingered yourself or anything like that?
No, I'm afraid I can just about keep a few flowers out the back without killing them.
All right, okay. Well, no green fingers, with our quiz contestants today. But look, will we get started?
No, Paul. I'm trying harder.
Exactly. Okay, Paul, are you ready?
I am.
Okay, all right, Paul. So This is our first category. It is noughties music, okay? So 1 point with the clue, 2 points for no clue. Would you like a clue?
We'll try no clue.
You'll try no clue. Okay. Who is this? Let's have a listen.
That's Lily Allen.
It is Lily Allen. Well done, Paul. Off to a good start. Okay, that is 2 points for you. Well done. Straight in there. Okay, Claire, are you ready for your first question?
I am.
Okay, so our first category, again, as I said, is noughties music. 1 point with a clue, 2 points for no clue. Would you like a clue?
No, thanks.
Okay.
No clue.
Here we go. Have a listen to this. Can we bring It is indeed. You said the Sugar Babes. Correct. Well done, Claire. Okay, you're off to a good start as well. That is 2 points. Okay, Paul, your second question. Okay, our second category is actors. Again, 1 point with a clue and 2 points for no clue. Would you like a clue, Paul?
We'll try no clue again.
We'll try no clue. Okay, who is this? Let's give this a play.
A high school history teacher called Dusty, very settled, very happy, kind of in plan from Ireland, maybe 20 years, but now this chapter in his life, he's married, he's got a kid, he thinks he has it sorted. This machine arrives in a local kind of grocery store with the promise of telling everybody what their true life potential is. So you kind of sit into the machine and it takes your fingerprint.
Okay.
I have no idea.
You've no idea? Okay, that was Chris O'Dowd.
Oh, that's your
voice. I know, because I thought he has such a distinct voice. But anyway, sorry, Paul. Don't worry. There's still time. Claire, are you ready for your second question?
Yep.
Okay, well, our second category is actors. Again, I'll say to you, 1 point with a clue, 2 points for no clue. Would you like a clue?
No, we'll try no clue.
Okay, who is this? Let's have a listen.
I'm glad that I learned to work hard early and that I have like a work ethic that I can rely on and discipline and that it's expected of me. Like, I think it served me well to be somebody who cared about that and also to be mindful about money and not blown through it for ridiculous things that don't add up.
Okay.
Okay, I'll just throw out a guess. Jennifer Lawrence?
No, it's not Jennifer Lawrence. It was actually Sarah Jessica Parker, and she plays Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City. I know. When you hear her out of context, it's a bit strange. I know. All right. Okay, we're on a level playing field right now. All right, Paul, you ready for your third question?
I am.
Okay, so our third category is Irish chefs. 1 point with a clue, 2 points for no clue. Would you like a clue, Paul?
Oh, we'll risk no clue.
You'll risk no clue. All right. Who is this? Let's have a listen.
Good food, you know, local products. Burger up to a nice steak or lobster or turbot, you know, so sandwiches. Yeah. You know, it's going to be kind of all day dining and then nice night dinners. And the hotel is 4-star, so it's not a 5-star operation. It's for everyone. The hotel will be for everyone. I'm looking forward to family celebrating their days out, their get-togethers, communions, Mother's Day, Father's Day.
Okay.
Yeah, I should have taken a clue.
You've no idea?
No.
Okay, it was Derry Clark. The Irish chef. Yeah, I know. Derry Clark's lovely. He's got the most beautiful blue eyes, Derry Clark. Claire, okay, this is yours for the taking now. This is your final question. Okay. So the third category, as you just heard there, it's Irish chefs. Again, 1 point with a clue, 2 points for no clue. What would you like to do?
I better take no clue.
You're going to go with no clue. Okay. Who is this?
Oh, well, yeah, go on, yeah.
I love a good picnic. I mean, for me, some of my fondest memories are outside with the kids picnicking. And do you find the food tastes so much better when you're outside? I have great memories of heading around the Wicklow Mountains with the kids. And I have a wonderful memory of a picnic with my dad up at Avondale. And I had the most beautiful picnic, now we'll admit, laid out, but I forgot the milk for the tea.
Catherine Fulvio?
You are correct. So well done. You did it without the clue. And Claire, sorry, that means, I didn't realise how tense I am with this quiz. Claire, that means that you are the winner today.
Thank you, Kira.
Paul,
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Paul, but you get a keep cup. And you know what? Go off and have yourself a great evening now at the FLA, okay?
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Paul. Kira. And Claire, congratulations, because you have won that fabulous night in the Heritage and County Leash. So there you go.
Oh, I'm delighted. Thanks a million.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much, Claire.
Bye.
Okay, the quiz will be back again this time. Tomorrow we'll be back after this.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, dog expert Samantha Rawson is on her way into us to answer all the questions that have been flying in all afternoon. But first, it's some music from Prince. That was Raspberry Beret, Prince. I love hearing a little bit of Prince in the afternoon. Now, Samantha Rawson, the dog expert, you're back with us in studio to answer all of your canine questions. So if you have any worries about your dog's behaviour or habits, you can still text us on 51551 or email ray at rte.ie for some free expert advice. Samantha, before we get to the listeners' questions, one that might affect a number of people towards the end of this month is kids going back to school and the dog feeling that sense of separation.
Yeah, so try and prepare them now, Kira. You know, it's 3 or 4 weeks. Most kids go back to the school, primary school, at the end of August, and then secondary, maybe it's the second week in September or whatever. So you've got 3 or 4 weeks. So start separating the dog now. So a great thing for all of these things are baby gates. Baby gates are a fantastic way of separating a dog because they still have access. They have social access. They're not being locked in a room. But if you have a baby gate, and maybe a large dog, you might need two baby gates on top of one another in a room. That's a way of just separating the dog and letting the dog see that life goes on around it. You can't be involved in everything, and getting it used to being on its own when people are around. The big mistake people make is expecting a dog to be alone when it's fully alone, without ever teaching it to be alone when there are people there. So your dog should be able to tolerate being in the kitchen or whatever room you designate on its own while there are people there.
But just slightly divided.
Yeah, slightly divided. So it just can't follow you. Dogs, again, are a bit like children. If you allow them to follow you everywhere, they obviously will get very attached. And then they get upset when you leave. So I don't like to let dogs see me leave. And I also don't like dogs to see people arrive. I think the comings and goings of a household should be none of the dog's business. So if it's not possible to exclude them altogether, if they won't tolerate a solid closed door, because an awful lot of dogs won't, then a baby gate is the compromise. But it's about getting them used to it now, so that when the kids do go back to school and they're on their own, maybe for 8 hours a day, that they're used to it.
So it's teaching dogs to be alone.
To be alone when people are home.
Right there, okay. Yeah. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, do you say there's a three-stage process to this separation?
Yeah, because if you think about over-attachment, obviously, you know, dogs are emotional animals and we have them as companion animals. So it's emotional attachment, physical attachment and visual attachment. So you can't deal with the visual until you've dealt with the physical and the emotional. So the emotional is the first bit, because if you can sit in a room with a dog and just ignore it, so the dog isn't expecting any attention, isn't expecting any kind of, you know, interaction, good, great. Then maybe you put in a bit of physical separation. So you move across the room, or you have the dog in a puppy pen so it can't follow you out of the room, or you go to the loo, or you go to make a phone call or whatever. And then visual. So the last thing is visual. Then maybe you might be able to put the dog behind a solid door. But that's the last thing you do. It has to accept physical separation, emotional separation before visual separation.
And obviously maybe reward them with treats when you get to that level of separation.
If you can distract them. I mean, if you can use their food, you know, organise things or time management things, so you give them their food, or you feed them in a licky mat, or you put food in a snuffle mat. I personally don't like food and toys, because toys should be toys and food should be food. I've seen aggression cases with food and toys, so I personally don't like food and toys. But there are loads of ways of feeding a dog interactively to help distract it from the fact that it's alone.
Okay, I know these are tips for dogs, but I'm also taking them on board myself. But anyway, we have a load of listener questions that have come in. This query came in earlier on, over attachment. It says, "Hi Samantha, I live on my own with my dog and he has no problems being left on his own. That's all fine. But it's become a thing now that when I visit family and stay at home, the dog gets really stressed and traumatized when my parents leave. He once ran out an open back door and around to the front of the house and chased the car up the road. I had to run after him. Now I make sure he's in the kitchen when anyone is leaving, but if anyone heard him, it sounds like he's been tortured. It also happens when family come to visit me. When they leave, he loses it. He's a Dachshund, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Dachshund, yeah.
Dachshund. And if that helps explain anything, I know he's a pack animal and is probably happiest with everyone together. Can you please help me as it's so upsetting for the dog?
Okay, so there's safety in numbers. And this is a two-part problem because she describes that she's in her parents' house. So she goes to stay with her parents. And obviously then maybe her parents mind the dog when she's gone off shopping or doing whatever for the day. So it's about giving that dog a secure place within that home and then repeating it in her own home. So there has to be a consistency of a safe area between her parents' home and her home.
Okay.
And again, the dog has to get used to not following everybody everywhere. Obviously, that dog is very attached to her parents and likes loads of people around. You know, dogs are social animals.
Social, yeah.
So the more people around, the safer they feel, depending on the dog. Some dogs are nervous of people. But this dog obviously feels safe when there's the more the merrier. So it's about teaching him that you have your own space within that home and then also within my home. So there's consistency between the two environments.
Okay, interesting. Here's another one about barking at strangers. I think we've all encountered this. Hi, Samantha. I have a wonderful 5-year-old black Labrador. He is dearly loved. He is gentle and sensitive, but he barks even when he meets people he knows. How can I get him to stop this as it frightens people and it frightens children? And that's many thanks from Kate.
Okay, so you've got to look at the motivation. Is it fear-based barking or is it attention-seeking barking? Has he been tried to dissuade from barking by giving a treat? Sometimes labbies learn very quickly that if I'm naughty, you'll try and shut me up with food. And then they obviously bark to get the food. So I would probably either scatter food on the ground, so I'm not hand-feeding the dog, I'm just putting it on the ground. Or with labbies, if they're into a ball, give the dog a toy. Because if a dog is holding something in its mouth, obviously it can't bark.
It's not going to bark.
And I would do that before people arrive. So try and change the association between people arriving and barking. Have the dog busy before the people arrive.
Because it must be so frustrating for people as well, like if you're living in apartment blocks or houses, or to have a dog barking and, you know, you hear the voice, but like, shh, would you stop? Yeah. Would you stop? So it's frustrating for the owners and obviously the people that are listening to it too.
But it's also a very easy command to teach. So if you teach the quiet command, so all you do is let the dog bark, put that on a cue, so speak. And then when you tell it to be quiet, throw it a ball or give it food. And as it's holding the ball or eating the food, you just say quiet.
Okay.
But it has to be done in like a split second. So you give the dog a ball, quiet. And then it very quickly learns, oh, quiet means shut up and I'll get a ball
or a
food treat. Yeah.
Okay. Now, this one is about a dog with anxiety. Hi, Samantha. I need advice for my little Jack Russell. She's about 6 years old, very bad anxiety. When someone comes into my house, I have to pick her up for the person's safety. I've tried diversions like hiding treats. I bought her for training, but the problem is still there. If she gets past me at the front door, she will find whatever neighbours are out and they may run because at this stage, she's in a heightened state, so cannot hear me. She had two homes before ours, okay? So she's not parting with me and I don't blame her. Similar behaviours happen when out and about. Some people she will love, others she just wants to bite. Oh dear. We go into the forest off lead and she loves it. Her behaviour is perfect. She will walk next to me and never threaten anyone. It took 2 years for her to accept she moved into a house with a cat. Now they are best friends. I will never give up on her though. I'm crazy about the little monster, which is why I'm asking for help. And that's from Julie in Portumna.
Okay.
There's a lot going on with that dog.
Yeah, Julie, she's a very lucky dog to have you in her life. It sounds to me like she's protecting Julie because she doesn't want to lose Julie. She's lost two owners already, so she's not going to let it happen again. So again, it's a bit like the previous one with the Dachshund. You need to give that dog a safe space within your home, and baby gates are great for that. So she shouldn't be allowed to greet people at the hall door. The hall door is a really dangerous place to be for a dog and for everybody else. And also, if she likes some people and doesn't like others, then it's really important that the dog has the space to retreat. So if there's a baby gate, if the dog comes forward, obviously the dog feels comfortable. If the dog retreats, the dog feels uncomfortable. So it gives you a chance to monitor the dog's emotional needs. Mm-hmm. Because that sounds like she's probably in the habit of driving people away because she wants Julie all to herself.
Right. So I know this is advice by dogs, but I wonder how that poor cat is feeling.
Well, it says that she's tolerated the cat. So obviously there's hope there. I mean, if a dog can learn one thing, it can learn another.
Exactly. Okay. Well, now this listener also has trouble getting the dog to sleep. Hi Samantha, could you recommend a way to make our terrier Shih Tzu mix rescue bitch more sleepy at bedtime? She is constantly on alert and our sleep pattern as a family has gone out the window. A friend recommended a Kong with treats, but I'm not sure this will work. She has walked for at least 40 minutes most days. Any advice is appreciated. And that's from Mary.
Okay, Shih Tzus are very pushy dogs, so you know, you do have your work cut out. But you need to give her a regular routine and a set bedtime. So my dogs have a bedtime.
Okay.
And it's not associated with my bedtime. I heard you talking about your own bedtime earlier on.
Is it 9 a.m. yeah, or 9 p.m.?
Yeah. My dogs go to bed at 9 o'clock. So it's really important to get that dog into her own routine that has nothing to do with the family's routine. It sounds to me as if the dog's routine is too closely interwoven with the family's routine. And the dog then is probably a little bit pushy and doesn't want the loss of contact.
Okay. Sorry, now just to interrupt you. How many hours sleep does a dog actually need?
Well, kind of. I would like them to get used to 8 hours sleep because like 8 hours sleep. Yeah,
that's the dream.
Yeah, it's about routine. And also, if she's walked for 40 minutes a day, maybe make that later in the evening, or again, give her puzzle toys. Give her something earlier in the day to tire her brain out. A dog that's mentally tired is a lot easier to live with than a dog that's just physically tired because they recover very quickly from physical tiredness. But mental tiredness really knackers them.
Okay. All right. And now this dog is pulling on the lead. Hi, Samantha. Any advice in relation to a Cocker Spaniel who pulls and pulls when walking him? He is a recent rescue. Thank you.
Front loading harness and put the lead on when you're watching a movie, when you're making a phone call, walk around the house. Get the dog used to the concept that a lead means you follow me, I don't follow you. So it's about getting the dog to follow you around the house on a lead and to make the lead quite boring, that it's not a signifier of something exciting. The other thing about walking down the road is you're always walking in a straight line. So invariably the dog has the opportunity to pull ahead. So when I'm working with clients, I put out obstacles and I teach the dog to walk around obstacles. So then it teaches them physical awareness of where I am and where they are. So walking in a straight line is very hard to teach a dog not to pull a lead because they have the opportunity to go boof.
Yeah.
So it's about walking around obstacles around the garden.
And about showing them who's the boss, really.
Well, but just physical awareness. It's not really about being the boss. It's about some dogs just have no idea that their owner's on the other end of the lead.
Okay. Now, here's a dog with trouble. We have a dog we got during the pandemic, and anytime someone new comes into the house, he does a wee. He's house trained and never has any accidents. So what's going on here?
This is submissive urination. It's a signal from the dog to say, please don't hurt me. I am of absolutely no threat to you. So it can't be corrected. It can't really be trained. You just have to wait for the dog to grow out of it because it's to do with feeling safe. And when the dog stops doing it, it's a great compliment to you because the dog will then feel safe. But you can't really address it because it's Mother Nature's way of saying, please don't hurt me.
Oh my God, I didn't realise that dogs had so many of these issues. Okay, this one came in today. This is about their dog and the car. Hello, Samantha. My dog is generally anxious and hates the car. How can we make the trip to the park more pleasant for him? He's a very good boy.
Make the car a mobile bed. So if the dog is a lovely, comfortable bed in the house, transfer that bed to the car and go out and make your phone calls, read your emails in the car without the car ever moving. So the dog has to be perfectly happy and comfortable in that car before it ever moves.
Okay, all right, we'll get one more in. Here's one about a Poggle and their bladder. Hi, I have a one-year-old Poggle. Am I saying that right? What's a Poggle?
It's a cross between a beagle and a pug. Why you would do that, I don't know.
Again, wheeze on everything, couches, beds, and now her bed. Please help.
It could be a sign of insecurity. And if you wash it, it has to re-scent everything. So I wouldn't wash the bed if you can bear it and maybe curtail its access to the couch and stuff like that. But its own bed, don't wash it.
All right, Samantha, thank you so much. Samantha Rawson, the dog expert. Look, that is it for today. Thanks so much for your company. Thanks so much to the team today. And as always, back tomorrow at 3, ray@rte.ie if you want to get in touch. And stay here. Drive Time is next with John Cook.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.